USAR, which comes to you from Montreal, Canada. It's an initiative of the Center for Research on Globalization. And our guest is Umberto Pascali, based in Washington, D.C., incisive writer, analyst of geopolitics in the European context, as well as ongoing developments with the U.S. Election campaign. Umberto, are you there?
Hi, Michel.
Hello. I'm sorry. We're having some small technical problems. Welcome to the program. I should mention that you have just written a very interesting analysis of the Obama campaign, where you focus on the statements of his running mate, Joe Biden, and you come up with a conclusion that, in effect, Joe Biden is presenting a strategic plan for the next administration, which is really an all-out war. Is that not the title of the article is called The Real War? Okay.
Yeah.
Can you?
Yes. The point that I was making, that I have been making the same point in the last one year and a half, and I was discussing these issues long before that. People tend to forget normally, especially I have to say in the Anglo-Saxon world, that how really an elite works, how really the leadership of a country, not the political leadership or the official leadership, but the real leadership of a country, how they work. And, you know, this is nothing new. This has been the same since much before Machiavelli, by the way. The leadership can use any instrument. Their goal is to keep themselves in power and to expand that power, very simply. And they can use every kind of instrument. Now, in the last 10 years, more or less 10 years, we have lived under a form of soft fascism called the neoconservatism. The neoconservatism, you know, associated with in the government with Vice President Cheney and basically the whole Bush administration. We had the war in Iraq, we had the war in Afghanistan, but before that, we had the war in Kosovo, or the war against Serbia in the Balkans. Now, one war was democratic, the Kosovo war was democratic party, you know, Holbrooke, Madeleine Albright, President Clinton. The other war was neoconservative Republican. Now, from the standpoint of the real elite, there is no difference. These are different instruments to reach the same target. Now, if you see the situation recently, the use of the neoconservative was not very productive. The real leadership, the real elite of the U.S., the financial leadership, in fact, find itself at this point weaker strategically, economically, ideologically, culturally, in the sense that there's no credibility. So they've been planning for a long time the idea, how can we come back? And the idea was, we cannot come back with another Bush, you know, with scaring people, imposing an open fascist state. We have to do something much more productive. We have to use the strength of the U.S. for our purpose.
I think we'll have to go. I'm sorry for interrupting you. We have a short commercial break, and then we'll be back for another 20 minutes uninterrupted. So please stay with us. Our guest is Umberto Pascali, analyst of the geopolitical situation and the U.S. election campaign. Welcome back to the Global Research News Hour, which is an initiative of Global Research. Our website is www.globalresearch.ca. Guest on the second hour of this program is Umberto Pascali, Washington-based analyst and writer and expert of geopolitics, who is discussing with us the, I would describe it, Umberto, as regime rotation, is it not? Republicans, with the elites manipulating in the background, they need a change, is that it?
Well, yeah. I think essentially is that. The problem is that they are very creative, and people get confused. Sometimes the particular regime change they are trying to apply now is to go for a so-called democratic regime, unify the public in the U.S., give the idea of a mission. But so this cannot be done by a Bush type of government. People must enthusiastically follow this guy, fanatically go follow the new government. And
Yeah, I'm sorry, but you're not changing the substance of policy, okay?
No, absolutely.
You're just putting on a different coat. It's the facade, is it not, of politics?
Exactly. The change, there is a proverb in Sicily used by the mafia. Change everything in order not to change anything. Now, the change, periodically, they need the changes. Historically, they need the changes because people at this point are so disgusted with the present administration from the left, from the right, that is untenable. You know, they are a danger more than being an asset for the real elite. So they need something totally different. But the program remained the same. What did they achieve with the invasion of Iraq? Well, okay, they now control militarily that area, but the big problem, as the top foreign policy advisor of Barack Obama, Zbigniew Brzezinski, and his son Mark, who works for the campaign, the big problem is they forgot the real war. Now, Joe Biden, in his acceptance speech for Vice President in a Obama administration, said it openly. The problem of the Republicans, the main problem, the main failure, is they forgot who the real enemy is. They forgot how to face, I'm quoting, the biggest forces shaping this century, the emergency of Russia, China, and India, great powers. Now, Russia, China, India, and basically the third world in general, these are the target. These are the enemy to be defeated. If you neocon, looks like Biden and the real elite is saying, if you neocon are not even able to conquer Iraq fast and smoothly, we don't need you. We need something else. And in fact, the war, according to Biden, according to Brzezinski, according to Obama already 1 year ago, when it was nothing, is not war in Iraq, or maybe yes, let's have the war in Iraq the way we have, but let's move now to the real point, Afghanistan. Now, why Afghanistan? Well, you know, Michelle, you know very well the situation of the crisscrossing pipelines and related, you know, possible looting of raw material, oil, gas. But strategically, Afghanistan is the crossing point, the central point between Russia, China, India, the vast majority of the population in the world. An alliance between these three colossus would change completely the situation. This is pushing us back to the great game of the British Empire in Central Asia. But, you know, in Afghanistan, you can start something. You can start a destabilization using so-called terrorism, anti-terrorism, and many other provocations, you know, using the drug mafia that is growing bigger and bigger under NATO occupation. And then you can create a wound that does not heal. And you can infect Russia, China, India, and provoke further conflict in China, for example, south of India, in the area of Caucasus. So this, I think, is the real war that the new administration is supposed to wage with popular support. Not like now, in which every American, you know, when they see Bush on TV, they smell something rotten, whether they understand what is it or not, but something which people enthusiastically followed it. You know, I don't want to exaggerate, but if you think at the beginning of fascism in Italy, fascism was not considered a right-wing. Fascism was considered revolutionary.
Yeah.
And everybody followed it. Everybody, I mean, besides the people that were thrown into jail, but they were a minority, everybody was following it. The biggest biographer of Mussolini was the American ambassador in Rome, as you know. Mussolini was a hero for the New York Times, the biggest newspaper in the U.S. So you need that kind of atmosphere, you know, liberal warmongering, something like that. That's what they have in mind. It's not clear they will succeed. Now, what's happening in Georgia, if we can go talk a little bit about that, it's very much connected to that. And I think beside the fact that Russia perceived a maneuver of encirclement that they couldn't accept anymore because they would have stopped having an ability to defend themselves. Now, besides whatever you think about Putin, you like, you dislike, you hate, you love him, but, you know, Russia as a country would not have resisted. And, you know, because it's official that the plan by Brzezinski, the big near Brzezinski, the guy who started Afghanistan in 79 as National Security Council, was not only to push Russia back to the wall, but to partition Russia and to transform Russia in 3, 4, 5 areas that would supply oil and raw material for a cheap price to the big multinational companies. That was the idea, the plan for Russia. Now, when NATO came so close, and when Shakashvili was told, okay, you can go with provocation, because it was a provocation, the Russian had to react. In a sense, they fell, in my opinion, into the trap. On the other side, they didn't, because I think they knew that this was a trap, so it was like understanding already what was the trick by the other side. So they prefer to go to a confrontation now instead of going after the new administration is in place in the U.S., in which when Holbrooke will be probably the Secretary of State, and I don't know, the general who organized the Kosovo war will be probably the defense secretary. But if they will not be, it will be something very close. These people are dedicated to a war against Russia and China. So if people are scared now of a war in Iraq and so on, imagine taking on these two nuclear superpower. It's not the game anymore.
Umberto, what strikes me in what you've described is the role of scholars and intellectuals, the think tanks, the people in the Council on Foreign Relations, mm-hmm. Brzezinski, Kissinger, etc. Now, you are Italian, so Niccolo Machiavelli was a mastermind of the notion of political domination, but he was a political philosopher and he was a very educated man. How do you compare these modern neoconservative intellectuals to those that we've seen through history? Do they compare to Machiavelli? I'd like to hear about Machiavelli.
Well, I wouldn't put them in the same. In the same room, you know. These people, you know, Machiavelli was not Machiavellian.
No, he wasn't Machiavellian. They are Machiavellian, but he's not Machiavellian. Is that correct?
No, it's like...
Yeah, he was a very distinguished, he was a diplomat and a philosopher and so
on. Absolutely. He was, yeah. What was trying to do is to start the first national state, the first nation in the sense unified sovereign republic in the world. Getting away from empire. He hated the oligarchy, for example. Now, later on, what Machiavelli wrote in Prince, in Prima Decade di Tito Livio, and so on, other, all his work, was used as sort of, in Latin, is instrumentum regni, an instrument of domination. You know, was reduced like formula. Okay, it's better to be hated than to be loved. Yes, Machiavelli said it, but in a particular context and meaning a particular thing. Now, if you see all the group of the neocon, these are pathetic, ignorant people that don't understand their position in history, they don't understand their position in geography, in strategy, and they have read these great authors like Machiavelli and so on without understanding anything. It's like someone who reads, I don't know, Dante, in order to scare people, if the people don't do what they want, they will go to hell. You know, basically, that's the point.
Uberto, we have to go to commercial break, so we will listen and come back in a few minutes after the break with this fascinating discussion on the neoconservatives and Machiavelli and many other issues. Stay with us.
This is Cascadia Public Radio.
Welcome back to the Global Research News Hour. My name is Michel Chassidovsky. This program comes to you from Montreal, Canada. It is an initiative of the Center for Research on Globalization. Our website is www.globalresearch.ca, where we cover news and public events, opinion pieces. One of our authors is Umberto Pascali, who is our guest on the program today and who has provided us with an extremely incisive review of the election campaign. What is going to happen next? Do you think that the Democrats will win this election, Umberto?
Well, yeah, I think they will, though I wouldn't say the Democrat will win. The Democrat will lose, but the ticket of Biden, of Brzezinski, and the real elite will win, and will take a new mask after having used the neocon. They will use this so-called democratic neocon. Again, if you will have Holbrooke as Secretary of State, you know the situation, how dangerous the situation will be. The key point, though, Michelle, I think it's not just what will happen inside the U.S. Unfortunately, I see the situation in North America very much controlled. I don't see any dialectic, any inside dynamic that could really change things, at least for the moment. People will be totally taken by this new atmosphere. Okay, the witch is dead, the Bush is out. We won, and it's understandable, you know, after 8 years of this monstrosity, it's understandable, the kind of reaction. But there will not be a stop from inside or a block even, an obstacle to the big plan, the plan for the war on Asia, let's say, the Russia, China, India, long-term war. Instead, I see some dialectic emerging from Europe. One of the reasons for Georgia, one of the reasons for the hysterical reaction by London and Washington to the events in South Ossetia, Abkhazia, Georgia, was to push Europe to get on the west side. Because, as you know, Europe, as Rumsfeld has said, is divided in two parts, the old Europe and the new Europe. The new Europe are the old countries part of the Warsaw Pact, allied of the Soviet Union during all the post-war period until the 90s. You know, the Baltic countries, Poland, the Czech Republic, and so on. This will be the new Europe. The old Europe will be the real Europe, the big country, Germany, France, Spain, Italy, basically. England is part of the Anglo-American New Europe coalition. The New Europe are countries that are small in general, very weak economically, totally taken over by either through the so-called colored revolution, like in Georgia and so on, or through economic aid and a lot of think tank. I think you have described this very well in your presentations, by Soros organization or similar instrument of the foreign policy of Anglo-American foreign policy. Now, if the plan of the war with Asia has to work, as Brzezinski wants, as Biden wants, then you have to have old Europe surrendering all its economic, ideological, political instrument, military instrument, to this coalition, this war coalition, a sort of grotesque caricature of World War II. This time the Russia, and then there will be like a sort of Operation Barbarossa against them that will last a long, long time, will be ideological, military, cultural, and so on and so forth. We have experience with that, so, unfortunately.
So, and are you suggesting that the new government, which will be installed in the White House in January of next year, could be even worse from the geopolitical strategic point of view in terms of global security than the outgoing Bush administration? Because some people have argued that essentially they stand for pretty much the same thing, but that people like Brzezinski are a little bit not so dangerous in terms of they're thinking people, and they don't want to push the world into a global disaster, okay, which might result in nuclear war. And Brzezinski has actually come up with some critique in this regard. How do you feel on this question?
Of course, Brzezinski is very clever. It's not an idiot, though it's geopolitics, the classic geopolitics, the Eurasian island and so on, it's nonsense, it's trash. But the problem, what Brzezinski is arguing, we have to win the war, the real war, and we have to take time. The real war is not won just by screaming and by being ideological. You have to be much more tricky. That doesn't mean we have to be better.
We'll have to come to take a break. We'll be back after the break with Umberto Pascali. Stay with us.
You're listening to the Republic Broadcasting Network. Because you can handle the truth.
Welcome back to the Global Research News Hour. This is Michel Chosudovsky. This program comes to you from Montreal, Canada. Website is www.globalresearch.ca. Our guest on the program is Umberto Pascali, incisive analyst and expert of the geopolitics of Central Asia and Eurasia, and observer of the U.S. political scene. Welcome back, Umberto. I was just thinking about Julius Caesar, because he had some particular problems, right? He understood that you do not build an empire with a republic. Are these people also in that in a similar dilemma. They're trying to build an empire, but they have to. But at the same time, they're getting rid of the republic and they're doing away with the Bill of Rights and civilian law enforcement, the justice system, and so on. They're scrapping everything, which is part of a whole history.
Well, yeah, you know, Julius Caesar, you know, emperor, the title imperator in Latin didn't mean emperor like what we mean now. I mean, head of the military was just the chief of general staff, or the commander-in-chief. That would have been the title, the commander of the legions. And Caesar and others became emperors as defender. We are defender of the republic. So Rome was an empire long before it became officially an empire. For a long time, even Augustus, Emperor Augustus, that was the high point of the empire, was still defending the republic. So we have to distinguish between the form and the reality.
I understand, but ultimately he when he started to conquer Gaul and extend the frontiers of the Roman world all the way you know to the Atlantic Ocean, he was and then he conquered Britain. He then did away with the power sharing arrangement which existed, what you might call the bipartisanship, you know, and the Senate and so on. And I think that we're experiencing something quite similar in the United States of America, where the institutions which people are used to are in the process of being scrapped.
Yeah.
Post 9/11.
Yeah. I mean, I think that's clear. I'm saying that in Rome, those institutions that formally existed already stopped existing in reality long before they stopped in paper, in the official form. You know, there was a dictatorship of the emperor and his centurions in the moment in which still officially the law of the republic were in place. But see, the problem we had in Rome, and we have, I fear, in the U.S. now, is that we are passing, we have an oligarchical system, in the sense, oligarchy, the domination of few people, few families. And that's what the real power, though there is a lot of resistance from people, it's ideological resistance, because what they believe to be themselves, a free, democratic country that is based on liberty and development and the American dream. This is a very strong, this is something very strong, it's a very strong element that contrasts with especially the most visible aspect of destruction of the freedoms and the constitutions and so on. So people rebel when they see something like that. People react and they don't want to see an official brutal fascism. But you are right. When you know, when the empire begin to become so big and they have different areas of the world, then first of all, the military instruments become key. It's not diplomacy that control the American base in the world. In case it's, you know, the Department of State become ancillary respect to the Department of Defense. But again, the Department of Defense, it's not an independent thing. Again, it's an instrument. So you have now a situation in which there is one real fight that I would say the American people in general reacting against what they see as destruction of their liberties. And then there is another fight, stronger, more insidious. It's between families that would be like the Roman Senate. This is where the noble family of Rome, the rich family of Rome, the old money family of Rome, that were reacting against this parvenu. Well, it was not parvenu, it was gens iuria, but, you know, this man coming from France, from Gaul, and say, okay, now I control everything. I don't need to confer with you and ask your opinion, you old money families. And then there was a war between the two. And then this was Pompeius, Mark Antony, Pompeius against Caesar and then against Augustus. Okay, but, you know, in the U.S. we have probably a similar situation. There is this element of the oligarchy that people forget. These old families, old, you know, that came with the Mayfair, that are, they want to keep their power, and there is a counter tendency to give power to just an institute to centralize, because we are in the final war to establish domination in the world, all over the world. But now, the point is that all these beautiful fights, because of the reaction of Russia, you know, good or bad, whatever you think about Russia, Russia refused to be conquered, as Russia refused to be conquered many times, several times in history, from before Napoleon on. So now these are in jeopardy. Now they need to discuss with the old Europe, France, Germany, Italy, Spain, to say, let's get together, let's fight against the new barbarians and so on. Are the countries of old Europe falling for it? I don't think so. I have just reported that I just received the most unbelievable people are opposing the hard line with Russia over Georgia.
Yeah, no, that's coming out now very clearly.
Berlusconi, you know, they're saying no, no sanction. Actually, we have to discuss more with Russia. We need them. So this, I think, will be the real where to look, you know, if you want to try to understand where the situation is going. What will happen from now to the election, from now to December? Because the crisis probably was precipitated by the Putin group, let's say, because they thought the crisis would have happened anyway, so better it happened, the sooner the better. Yeah. And so we have this situation now.
Just since we're talking about the Roman Empire, there's some people have made some simple, of course, analogies between the American Empire and the Roman Empire, but some people are suggesting, in fact, that the American Empire is in the process of crisis and decline. How do you view that? Is the American Empire going to collapse like the Roman Empire?
Well, you know, this normally historians tend to think in terms of objective terms, but subjectivity in history is one of the most important elements. What will happen to the U.S., the present U.S.? It's difficult to say. Again, now immediately depends on what they will able to do with the countries of old Europe.
Yeah.
Establish if they cannot establish a relation, putting together all the military economic power and go after Asia, if they cannot do that, then they are in trouble. Now, in trouble, when I say in trouble, I don't mean the American people will be in trouble. The American people potentially will be saved by that. But the present elite will be in trouble. They will not be able to dictate the situation in the world. They will not be able to nominate themselves emperor and do whatever they want. The Roman Empire collapsed internally because of the incredible corruption and usury and so on, but also because the conquering, they were stopped by at the eastern borders, exactly like it's happening now. At the time was the German tribes. They begin to react. Rome couldn't break through on the German tribe. And in the south was in Parthia, basically where is Mesopotamia, Iraq now. These people resisted. And when the legion for the first time were defeated, then the rolling back started. And this had the consequence because Rome was living out of loot. They were looting these countries through incredibly harsh taxation, even if, you know, the culture in Rome had reached a certain level, mostly taken first from the Etruscans, then from the Greeks. But still, the key point was they were stealing from the people they were conquering. taxation was unbelievable. And there are reports from, German tribes that were much less barbarian than people think. They say, well, we want to be Civis Romanus. We want to be Roman citizens. But I cannot survive. I cannot pay these taxes. All my harvest goes to pay taxes. So I have to rebel. So they provoked, through that method, their own rebellion. All the bases, all the military bases they established, all the vallus in England, in Gaul, didn't work because the system was rotting from inside and found, finally, a resistance side.
But today what we have is a system which is really based on unequal exchange. I mean, all these colonies or semi-colonies of the Western countries, including China for that matter, mm-hmm. they are taxed by providing cheap commodities at one fraction of the price at which they're sold in the U.S. market. Yeah. China, for all sakes and purposes, is an industrial colony. It's not a political colony.
Yeah.
But it's comparable. It's a process of looting the resources of these countries.
Yeah, looting, it's a very creative field. You can find many way of looting, especially when you have a lot of these economists that are genial inventing theories and so on. You know, from Adam Smith on has been, an orgy of this kind of theory, how to loot better. You know, there are few economists that really see the economy as something to increase the commonwealth of the people. Of the world.
There are not many, I don't know many economists who actually believe in that. There are few. But most of the economists, what they do is they talk about scarcity and free markets and they provide a smokescreen for the extension of these free markets into different countries, and then of course they loot. I mean, they take out the resources, the oil, and they set up assembly plants, and ultimately they get everything very, very cheaply. And that, of course, I think is the basis of this expansion. You made, I think, a very important point on old Europe versus New Europe and the Anglo-American alliance. Ultimately, what is at stake is the system of alliances. And I think history also tells us that when those alliances, we saw it prior to World War One, how the structure of alliances, which were set up by Bismarck, etc., started to collapse, and then we were in a World War One situation, and what we're now seeing is in fact a situation where Western Europe, old Europe, is allied with the United States and Britain, but at the same time it has links with Russia and Asia.
Yeah.
Is that not the situation? And that of course could change.
Yeah, but I think that it will not be easy to just say, okay, now Europe, you come with me and we go to war with the East. Will not be easy.
It's not easy.
And in fact, I was telling you today, Berlusconi, who is not a liberal, as you know, the Prime Minister of Italy, Silvio Berlusconi, came out and said, absolutely no, absolutely. I talked to the Allies meaning mostly Britain, because, London in the European Union is the one pushing more for the hard line with Russia, but Berlusconi say no. Berlusconi say Russia remains a military power, a country whose nuclear capabilities are enough to destroy the planet's population 10 times over. A country whose economy has grown 7 to 8% annually. A country that is rich in oil gas that is needed by Europe. So, ergo, we cannot do
anything. We cannot fool around with this.
And Fillon, the first minister of France, came out also today saying it is absolutely essential to prevent a situation where the current crisis in the Caucasus it's used to ignite a new Cold War. We have instead, as President Sarkozy said, we have to push for a dialogue with Russia now. So this is all done because what is going on now is the council, the meeting of the European countries to decide the line of Georgia. England, of course, U.S. from the outside, Poland, were pushing sanctions. The decision is, first of all, no sanctions. Then there will be a verbal rebuke that I found weaker than I even thought against Russia. And then say, okay, to solve the situation, or dialogue with Russia. That is a nightmare for the people who want the war to go to an escalation.
Well, it's a very interesting scenario. So we will not be eating the freedom fries anymore, huh?
No, freedom fries, and you know the situation now will be.
Might be eating freedom fries because if the French go against Americans, then we'll have to rename them. Yeah.
Les pommes de la liberté.
Yeah. We'll have to go to a short commercial break. Our guest is Umberto Pascali, incisive analyst of the geopolitics of Europe and America. Observer of the U.S. election campaign. Stay with us for the last 5 minutes of the Global Research News Hour. Welcome back to the Global Research News Hour. This is Michel Chostodovsky. Our website is www.globalresearch.ca. We are speaking with Umberto Pascali, analyst and author of the evolving geopolitical situation and the prospects, the dangers of war. We have approximately 4 minutes before the end of the program. Umberto, where do we go from here?
Michel,
Kovadis.
Let me be short, correct, standing. The quote I gave before for François Fillon, the Prime Minister of France,
yes,
was not correct. Actually, the quote is even stronger. He said that in polemics against the Prime Minister of Britain, Gordon Brown, he said that President Nicolas Sarkozy of France would embark on a new mediation between Georgia and Russia and seek to pursue dialogue with the Kremlin. Quote, either we want to relaunch the Cold War, point our finger at Russia, isolate it, and stamp on it, as was the case for a decade, but that is not the choice of France or Europe. Or we choose the option of dialogue. So something has already happened. Where we go from here is this. First of all, we have seen the kind of media blitz that show how vulnerable the population in the West, probably in the world, is. People couldn't get a right assessment of the situation that was going on from many of the major media or even the minor media. This is scary, and I hope this will make a lot of people to meditate what can be done to establish some form of journalism of information that will be something that existed even one century ago, 2 centuries ago. In the 1700s, there was some alternative form that was reaching the people. Now, today, the level of ignorance in the sense of people not knowing what practically is going on, it's unbelievable.
But
that's one point. The other point is to remember that if you want to go to this war, liberal imperialism, with the new democratic or pseudo-democratic administration, even if, you know, McCain will not be much different, just less capable. But if you want to go to a war, you have to remember that now, Russia is not the Soviet Union. They don't have a conventional armament. They have nuclear weapons. I don't know what's going on in their mind, but they have shown that they will not back down, because they did back down and they saw their country on the verge of partition. So a nuclear war now will be more possible than any time during the Cold War, so-called Cold War. So this should be a sobering thought. And I think on the other side, the only side that is going to win, it's this crazy adventurer side, this group of in the elite, in the Anglo-American world, the other part of the world, that think in terms of, you know, it's like a caricature of a bad spy movie, to control the world, to conquer the world. You know, some Napoleonic megalomania when the world doesn't want to be conquered, and the world is quite advanced for that. So,
Umberto,
it's possible a conflict, or it's possible a new alternative.
Umberto, well, have to say goodbye on these words, not optimistic, the Global Research News Hour. Thank you very much, Umberto. We'll be back next week with my colleague and co-host, Stephen Lenman. This is Michel Shostakovsky from Montreal, Canada, with the Global Research News Hour.